Wisconsin's Afternoon News is on the air, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. Here are your hosts, John McCure and Julia Fellow.
All right, hope you're having a great Friday. Thank you for hanging out with us. A local company making a big difference. We'll get to that story in just a couple of minutes. But first, a date's finally been set for lead testing students at four Milwaukee public schools. WTMJ Sean Brenda's done a great job on this story, the lead story in Milwaukee public schools the last several weeks. What's the update today, Sean?
Yeah, John and Julia, a whole lot of new updates were given to us today about the lead dust levels at Milwaukee public schools. Lead screening tests for all students at Golden Meyer Lower Campus, Coggle, Maryland Avenue, Montessori, and Trowbridge Schools will take place next Saturday at Bradley Tech School from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Each of these schools have had at least one student that was tied to blood lead poisoning. Now, the City Health Commissioner, Mike Todorais, has more information on the upcoming clinics.
A lot of information will be going to the parents of the four schools, and those are listed there on the side. Ahead of time so that parents can pre-plan, fill out their consents, and have the information ready to go. So we're really hoping to have this be as seamless as possible for parents coming in with children. As a parent myself, I know it's always hard to wrangle kiddos, and hopefully this time will be good.
Now, additional clinics are being set up at two 16th Street clinics and a Children's Wisconsin clinic as well. With cleanup efforts around MPS to get closer to ensuring all four schools have little to no lead dust, during the press conference, more results were given on a Trowbridge School's cleanup that were given to MHD, and 55 out of 60 classrooms were being cleared. The Deputy Health Commissioner, Tyler Weber, says with these results, a decision was up in the air on whether Trowbridge should open again on Monday.
There's an opportunity potentially to open the school, but with some rooms remaining closed. Again, we haven't officially announced that yet. We need to look in the details. We have to process the results, but by the end of business day, we want to get more information out there.
Interesting.
At this time, we still don't have any information on whether if Trowbridge will open or not, but parents could be informed later this evening or over the weekend. But the most surprising news, John and Julia, is that we learned today that at the request of the Milwaukee Public Schools to the City Health Department, 10 additional schools will be looked at for possible high levels of lead dust.
So part of that was in collaboration with MPS and asking us to come check some of their schools and some of their priority schools. And then we have a priority list, too, that we've made based on age of school and age of the students in the school. So it's a pretty basic measure, but that helps us prioritize the schools and then marry that list with what the district is looking for as well.
Now, these 10 schools selected were not chosen because of children with high blood lead levels, but because MPS saw elements within the schools that warranted further investigation into possible lead dust buildings in parts of those schools. The list of those schools will possibly be released next week by MHD and MPS, but I'll have more details for both of you as we continue on with the MPS lead saga.
Good stuff. WTMJ Sean Brenda also announced today lead screening clinic for MPS students who attend four of the schools, Golden Meyer, Coggle, Maryland, and Trowbridge, is on Saturday, March 15th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. That's at Bradley Tech School, so you can look that up. Sean, good stuff. Thank you so much. It is 5:13 at WTMJ. From the WTMJ Breaking News Center, it's good news. It's out of the Oak Creek area. Lillian Asala, the young girl, I think she was 13 years old.
Yes.
Had been missing since Saturday. She walked away from her house, went to a skateboard park. They found her phone later on. No Amber Alert was ever issued because she had walked away from her house. She has been found safe. Don't know any other details, but police are reporting that Lillian Asala has been found safe. She is okay. That is great news.
Oh, that is amazing. What
it's so awesome when these stories end in a positive fashion. Our newsroom is on top of the story. As we get more information, we will bring it to you. But Lillian Asala from Oak Creek, after being gone for almost a week, has been found safe. Want to switch gears here because we spent a lot of time talking about tariffs and how negatively it could impact all of us. Colders, a great Wisconsin company, is doing something incredible. A staple in our community. They've been here over 80 years. And Colders Furniture, Appliances, and Mattresses is stepping up to protect local shoppers from price hikes. So while a lot of other companies like Best Buy and others are raising prices, at Colders, they've decided to lock them in. This is from the president of Colders, Tom Balestrieri. For those who want to take advantage before prices increase, we have $20 million of inventory at our current prices. We're locking it in. This isn't just a business decision, Tom says. It's our way of giving back to the community that has supported us for decades. I've been in their stores. They've got great selection. and they're making a difference. Good news on the tariff front. Kohler's deciding to lock it in, saying every item currently in stock will remain at the same price that it's been. Even if the tariffs go into effect at a higher level, they're keeping the items they have on their floor at the very same price. A company that does things the right way every day, it's Kohler's.
It's greatly appreciated. So greatly appreciated. Mr. Balistrieri is doing such a great job. I agree. Not taking advantage, and we appreciate that.
Thinking about the community, as they've done for more than 80 years. It's 519 at WTMJ. Happy Friday. Glad you're hanging out with us. One of the things I love about Friday is that we do this cool feature. Maybe it's stories you haven't heard a lot about, or we just want to dive into a little bit deeper. And we call this segment,
In Case You Missed It.
All right, here we go. We're a big board game family. Huge board game family. We have literally, like last I counted, 125 board games at home. Full closet, and we have like four versions of Monopoly. Well, guess what? Hasbro's announced a new version of Monopoly that simplifies gameplay by replacing cash and the banker with a mobile app that handles all the game's transitions. You buy this version of the game, there's literally no cash that comes with it. Instead, you're expected to use your phone or a tablet with a free app that plays the role of banker, keeps track of every player's money and their properties. No more property cards.
What?
Yes. They say it makes the game more accessible to younger players, and it will shorten the game.
Sean, what do you think?
Sounds like Monopoly Venmo to me.
Yeah. It sounds terrible to me.
It's like, just play it all virtually then.
Yeah. So now what? Now we're introducing screen time even to Monopoly board games. You sit down and play a board game so you're not on your screen. And now this is part of Monopoly. It also gets around the end game of learning math a little bit. Getting off your phone.
Yes.
It's going to speed it up, but get this out of here.
The
no way.
Tender. You're
right. Monopoly the old school way.
In case you missed it.
All right. So you know how there's been a lot of airline disasters?
Yeah.
There was an amazing airline pilot from Delta Airlines. His name is Phil. And he went on the intercom where a flight attendant would usually speak. And here's what he said.
During those 3 hours, 24 minutes, there is literally nobody more important in my life than you and the crew. I wanted to take this opportunity while I have a captive audience to look you in the eye, up and down the aisle, from my friends here in the first row, all of my friends in 38, 39 in the back, and say thank you. The last couple of years hasn't been easy for flying. I get it. Fly for work. I fly for fun. And I want you to know from the bottom of my heart, I appreciate every single one of you putting your trust in this crew and the Delta Airlines for your loyalty, because I know for a fact that Delta wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you.
That's it.
Yay! That's so good.
Phil, thank you so much.
So good.
It was very meaningful.
In case you missed it.
All right. Well, have you ever run or heard of an ultra marathon?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's over 100 miles, I believe, is what they run.
That's crazy.
Ever run on a treadmill?
Oh, sure.
What's the longest you've ever run on a treadmill, John?
Not very far, actually. On a treadmill, the longest is maybe 12 miles.
Oh, yeah. Mine is like 4. That's really far.
Yeah. How about 226.8?
What? Whoa.
Yeah. This lady, Sophie Power, in the UK, she's a British athlete and is actually an ultra runner.
Wow.
Ran for 48 hours.
Oh, what?
She covered more than 365 kilometers, so 226.8 miles on a treadmill.
How'd she stay awake?
She needs to eat.
Yes, she did. She did get to eat. She would be refueling with, like, caffeinated candies and things that'll keep her blood sugar up and everything. But actually, she says that the thing that actually helped her the most is jam sandwiches.
How'd she go to the bathroom?
With the crust cut off. Yeah, she would get to go to the bathroom, and she would get to get some rest. Although, her body wouldn't allow her to fall asleep. She would just rest.
Wow.
And she said it was after
failure with all this stuff. That's crazy.
Exactly. And after a certain point in time, she would be so tired that it started to get really dangerous to try and run. Her legs were so wobbly. So after a break, that she was able to take a break, she got back onto the treadmill and then started hiking for the rest of the distance.
That's
so
amazing.
It is going to be ratified, hopefully, by the Guinness Book of World Records. So it's still subject to ratification, but they're saying that it's a good chance that it will be ratified as being the longest to run on a treadmill.
In case you missed it.
So 200 to 200,000 species extinctions happen every year on this planet. That's more than 2 million species in the world from vertebrates, insects, and fish. But scientists have been working around the clock to bring back one of the more recognizable extinct mammals back from the dead, the woolly mammoth. Now, I want you guys to tune in to the Sign Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line 855-616-1620 for this. In a recent breakthrough, scientists were able to get one step closer to bring these large pachyderms back by creating woolly mice. Yes, you heard that right. Mice scientists at Dallas-based Colossal Biosciences were able to genetically modify long woolly hair similar to a mammoth of 1,000 years ago and implant that into DNA in lab mice. These adorable little mice now have longer, woolly, golden-colored coats and a fat metabolism similar to the woolly mammoths that keep them warm in Arctic-like conditions.
Whoa!
Text watch.
Colossal hopes to produce mammoth-like Asian elephant embryos next year and to have their first baby calves by 2028. And the company is also working on bringing back the dodo and the Tasmanian tiger.
Whoa! Julia's right. Text the word watch to 855-616-1620. Isaac, leave that up for a little bit. You can see these mice. They're really cute. They're really cute.
Very furry.
I would have one for a pet.
Yeah, they are super cute. Cutest mouse ever for sure. Let's bring in our friend, Chief Meteorologist Brian Niznanski, on a sunny... Now it's kind of cloudy. It's a Friday. Hello, Niz. Hey,
depends.
Look at Niz.
Yo.
There he is.
I can... What's
Whoa,
up?
Full screen. Text watch.
I can pump up Otto's for you right now if you want. I got Otto's covered, covered very well.
Are you an Otto's guy? Have you been to Otto's?
Oh, I love Otto's. I've been going to Otto's since probably 2000 when I was on the... Well, I shouldn't say that. It was more... Never mind. More like 2002 because that's when I was 21. So.
Do they have a really good selection?
Yeah. I mean, Otto's has always been such a local staple there on Oakland, and I know they've expanded other places. But yeah, no, I like getting Otto's coupons.
I love you to know, hear you that. Get that. Yep, they really do have the best prices and the best selection, no doubt about that. Sounds like we're going to have a great weekend, Niz.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, looking up after today, I mean, today was just kind of crummy, kind of drizzly, snowy in some spots. The snow really didn't add up to much. At one point, the airport did have 0.4 inches of snow that I saw, but I know that melted away. And really, this evening, the wet pavement out there is starting to dry up. If you're heading out to a fish fry this evening, temperatures will be falling back into the 20s eventually, so winter coat weather. But looking ahead to the weekend, guys, 40s tomorrow and then some 50s on Sunday.
Whoa, that's sounding really, really good. And daylight saving time is this weekend, right?
Oh, no. Yeah.
Losing a sleep, hour of sleep. So when you go to bed Saturday night, you got to make sure you turn your clocks forward. I know it's a good opportunity to check the smoke alarms, things of that nature. So, yeah, when you wake up Sunday morning, you lose an hour. Now, the positive of this, think of Sunday evening. You're sitting outside and it's 50 degrees and you're soaking it up and the sun will set close to 7 o'clock on Sunday.
I don't mind losing an hour on Saturday. It's worth getting the sunlight and it's Saturday. So at least it's on a Saturday.
I'm sleeping in. No, it's Sunday morning, isn't it?
It's going into Sunday morning, but Saturday night,
we don't have to
get up really early the next day.
The problem is try telling your kids to get back to bed. You know what I mean? Like they.
Yeah, that's true.
But no, it's such a huge debate. People are passionate about it too, like whether we should be doing daylight savings time and the positives and negatives of it. I see both sides, but I mean, if we didn't do it, it would be, you know,
I'd have to.
Yeah, you're more on the favor of not turning the clocks.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of states don't do it. I think Arizona.
No. Our biggest problem would be there would be a lot of mornings in the middle of winter where we wouldn't see the sun until, like, you know, 8:30.
That was the argument. A lot of parents worry about their kids in the morning.
I'm good with that, though. I'm good with that. Give it to me in the evening instead. Would it be 8:30? Is that really how late it would be on the worst of it? It would be 8 or 8:30?
I'd have to double check, but yeah, we would be well into the 8 o'clock hour before we'd start
to
see.
That is kind of late. I'm usually still sleeping then. That's, that doesn't really matter. I get up at 8:30, even during the week.
Yeah, we don't want the light in our eyes when we wake up. Yeah,
I know.
Just keep sleeping.
That's right.
Either way, so we can. No matter how you look at it, our days are getting longer, though, and that's something that I think everybody, you know, can agree on. That the amount of daylight, you know, we're gaining about 2 to 3 minutes of daylight a day this time of year. So
let's go.
Something to look forward to. Yeah, and I got my first 60 on the 7 day.
Oh,
that's
give us
on
it.
Monday.
Give us the 7 day or the 5 day. Lead us through.
Good.
Sure. So partly cloudy tonight, low of 25. Tomorrow, partly cloudy. So a mix of sun and clouds. And there might be a little sprinkle in the afternoon tomorrow. Not a big deal. If you want to be outside, don't let it detract you from doing that. 46 for your high tomorrow. Sunday, mostly sunny, 53. Monday, mostly sunny, 60. And then Tuesday, partly cloudy and a high of 55 degrees. So a very spring-like five-day forecast.
Good stuff, Niz. Have a great weekend.
You too, guys. We'll see you later.
Yes, it is 542 at WTMJ. Big story that we've been following for quite some time with a major development yesterday. Morgan Geiser, the Slenderman stabber, can proceed with a conditional release plan. A judge rejected a petition to say, no, she shouldn't get out. Waukesha County Circuit Court Judge Michael Boren set aside concerns about Geiser's release yesterday. An 11th-hour petition by state officials who wanted her conditional release revoked, said no, that's not going to happen. Anthony Cotton has represented Morgan Geiser for quite some time. The renowned defense attorney joins us live in the studio. Tony, good to have you here. Thank you so much.
Great to be back. Thanks for having me.
We're going to get to a lot in this 10 minutes, but I want to get to right what was so visual that people were talking about. The violent imagery in the books, the drawings that she's made, that sort of thing. Do you believe, and you've been with her for a long time, that the public should be concerned at all because of any of these things? Or is that not a concern and you're good with everything?
No, it's not a concern and I'm good with everything. Morgan's reading list consists of books from the Bible to Vincent van Gogh to French literature to Stephen King. So, I mean, her interests sort of span the spectrum, everything except Westerns, I would say. I might have misstated that in court. But other than that, she's a well-read young girl. The drawings are nothing new. All the doctors have known about the drawings.
Which is why the conditional release was granted, and then they're trying to backtrack. And your argument was, hey, you allowed that. You suggested, okay, that's fine. And you knew that she was doing these drawings before. So what's the problem?
Right. I called it a hit job in court, and I'll call it a hit job today. It was. It was a last-minute, 11th-hour, last-ditch attempt to circumvent what the judge had clearly ruled, which was give me, meaning the judge, a plan for her release. That's what he ordered. Instead, they returned with a revocation petition. And the sad part about it was they did this without ever talking to the doctors. You know, if these people had just talked to the doctors who evaluated Morgan, they would have learned that the treating professionals don't see an issue here. In fact, even Morgan's therapist testified yesterday that she sees no problem here. So where's the beef, as the judge said?
So the revocation petition could have been brought earlier. It could have been brought at an earlier stage. Why do you believe that they did it this way, that they tried to do an end run around what the judge had directed?
I'm still completely blown away by what happened. I was given notice maybe a week or 10 days before this. They set up an emergency Zoom conference with me. I honestly thought when DHS set up this conference, this is the agency that was doing the report. When they set up this meeting with me, I honestly thought they were going to talk to me about what group home she was going to go to. And I come into this meeting, and all of a sudden they have a legal representative there, somebody from the legal department. And I thought, oh boy, this something weird is going on. And they tell me because of a drawing and contact with a guy in the community from 2 years ago and a book that as a result of that, they're going to revoke her. And I was just flabbergasted. I still sort of am.
And drawings that they had already known about. Also, there was this creep that was visiting her and then had sexual gratification with her. He has a law enforcement background. He was a corrections officer. And then he was trying to sell some of the photos of this headless person that she drew. What was he calling it? I had it. It was the Slender Man package. Okay, that was concerning when I was hearing it. But you, in the cross-examination, said, okay, how long had he been visiting? We all knew that he was visiting since how long ago?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Visits are known and documented when people come into Winnebago. This was a 7 day or 10 day period of time when he had come in there, I think on 3 occasions. Winnebago knew about it. There was nothing shocking about the fact he had come in there and visited her. And there was nothing inappropriate about the visits. There was no inappropriate contact. There was no hidden agenda by Morgan. And in fact, she was the one who cut off contact with that adult man when she became aware of his weird perversions.
Yeah, and she came forward with the fact that she was reading that
and
one
and I
book.
Thought she should be commended for that. I didn't think it was appropriate to try to punish her. I thought they were sending mixed signals to Morgan yesterday by trying to do this to her, and I'm amazed at her resilience, because when they were trying to do this, it was like they want her to be honest. They want her to be vocal and upfront about things, and yet when she answers their questions,
and
they
truthful.
Turn it back, and it's truthful, they turn it back on her.
So the drawings do seem dark. And they
the
seem,
one they showed yesterday seemed dark.
It did. It seems weird at the least.
Head off with
Is she a dark person? Is she light and easygoing? You know her and get to spend time with her. How would you describe Morgan Geiser when she's not in the courtroom?
I would say she's a quirky person who is well-read and can talk about a wide array of subjects. I think the art that you're talking about is part of a therapeutic process that I'm not involved with. That's something that she works on with her therapist. There's a variety of different types of therapy. There's art therapy, talk therapy, group therapy. Art is one way in which she has always expressed herself. And the therapists have said, these are the professionals, not me. They've said, it's good. She should express herself through her artwork, get her, as Morgan has said, get these things out there, and then they can work through it in a treatment setting.
So she was reading the book Rent Boy, which she told everyone that that's what she revealed.
That's what sent her.
Themes of sexual sadism, graphic content, according to the petition that was argued in court. So we don't know who sent her the book. She didn't check it out at the library. So how did she get that book?
I don't know. You would think that if they want to revoke her petition, they ought to tell us who sent her that book or investigate. It seemed to me that nobody had even read the book. I mean, I sat through this hearing yesterday, and I don't know that anybody who testified even actually read the book. I heard people talk about reading summaries on the internet. I didn't hear one witness say they even read it.
Was this an act of desperation?
Yes.
By prosecutors?
Not by prosecutors, but by the DHS officials who were supposed to give a plan. The prosecutors were just following the path that I think they reasonably needed to follow under those circumstances. But this was an act of desperation, without a doubt, by DHS. They were told to prepare a report for her release, to try to revoke her without going back to the doctors who support release. I thought it was embarrassing that we spent taxpayer money when nobody had talked to these doctors who had done the evaluations. And what did we learn during the hearing? None of them had changed their opinions at all based on this information, because it wasn't new.
Yeah, I think if it wasn't for you, she would probably still be there, maybe for the next however many years she has. She was sentenced to 40 years in that institution.
Well, I think if it wasn't for Judge Boren, that would be true, because he's really, as he nears the end of his career, I think certainly doing the right thing here, and I have a lot of respect for the way he approached this case.
But here's the thing. She is convicted that she stabbed her classmate 19 times, nearly killing her. So how can we make sure that we're safe when she goes to a group home or wherever?
Well, she's going to be supervised for the next 30 years, because if you remember, the judge actually committed her for 40. So she's done about 10 of those years. She'll have 30 more of intense community-based supervision. And if she were to violate any of her rules, as was testified to yesterday, she gets locked up. So I think there's, and by rules, I mean, that can be anything from inappropriate contact, inappropriate behavior. It doesn't have to be criminal behavior. She is found in possession of a weapon, for example. If she leaves a group home when she can't, any of these things could result in her just being taken back into custody.
So we're cheering for her. We want her to do well. We as a community need her to thrive.
Everybody.
We need, everybody needs for her to do well. We want the best for her. Does her imminent release cause you any angst or worry? I know you believe this should happen, but when you lay your head down on your pillow at night, you have a lot of stake in this, because you've gone to bat and said she's ready. Are you nervous at all at any level?
Yeah, I'm nervous on some levels that there's a lot of unknown variables for how Morgan can handle the free world, because she's been institutionalized since the age of 12. And I've got young children who are approaching that age, and I look at them and think, if they had to have their middle school years and high school years inside a facility, how equipped would they be for the real world? Probably not very. So I think there's going to be a lot of acclimation that takes place. There's going to be a lot of hand-holding and step-by-step guidance. And I hope she does it. We don't ever have a crystal ball, but I'm cautiously optimistic.
You know what I get worried about? Mm. It's like this weird guy. Like,
I know.
You can't control Morgan.
What
can't control
about?
It. There's some sick people out
there's
there.
There's some sick people out there, and I've seen it firsthand. And it's really sad when you see those things, and even with people who you wouldn't expect end up becoming obsessed for reasons that only they can answer. And that is the biggest risk factor, I think, for Morgan, is not her own risk factor. It's those other people that do not have her best interests in mind and will seek to take advantage of her.
What is the supervision like, just so we're all feeling
incredibly
safe?
Yeah, in fact, it's so intensive that her supervision, when she's released from the Mental Health Institute, probably in the next few weeks, will actually be more restrictive than it was inside the facility. She will have less freedom. She will not be leaving the group home. She will be on electronic monitoring. In fact, part of the plan will be that she doesn't even disclose her address to her own family.
To her mom, yeah.
To even her mother.
So will they be able to see each other?
Nope. No. So the plan, I mean, we don't have the exact details of the plan, but I'm anticipating that it will be so restrictive that she will not even have family contact during those first weeks and months of that placement.
Is she relieved? Is she happy?
Yes.
Is she nervous? What was her reaction?
I could see her reaction was positive. She's not the kind of person who's giving high fives in court or diving into the audience and into happiness. But she is cautiously, she's looking forward to the future. She's happy. I could see her smiling at times when she realized the judge was going to permit this to go forward. That's all we wanted. We just wanted a fair shake here. We got it. I felt like this last minute filing was unfortunate, but we overcame it. And kudos to the judge for ultimately doing the right thing. It takes a lot of courage for a judge to have that kind of backbone to do the right thing.
I mean, just the first person that you cross-examine, I think that if someone's going through law school, you should definitely study how Anthony did that.
Defense attorney Anthony Cotton, always good to have you here. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the shout-out. I appreciate that.